This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Dasharan Johan. It's World Humanitarian Day today, and World Humanitarian Day is held every year on 19th of August to pay tribute to aid workers who risk their lives in humanitarian service and to rally support for people affected by crises around the world. And this year's theme, Real Life Heroes. So in conjunction with that, my guest on Live and Learn today is a real life hero herself, someone who has been mobilizing and providing food and aid for the underprivileged communities throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and someone who has, for the past decade or so, been helping marginalized communities. I am talking about Prema Tiagu, one of the founders and vice president of Pertubuhan Pembangunan Hope Selangor, or just Hope Selangor for short. Welcome to the show, Prema. How are you doing?
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm good. I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. So first, let's start with your organization. Tell me a little bit about Hope Selangor. What do y'all do?
Okay, I would like to start with a quote. Yeah, mm-hmm. Not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Mm-hmm. That's the basic condition of our organization. And as you can see, the word hope. So we give hope for those who are living in hopeless situation. So Hope was founded in 2004 by me and by my husband, where we believed in the importance of providing hope to the hopeless. Hope is a registered charity working to alleviate poverty and social exclusion in Selangor region, which now expanded to other states. At Hope, we prioritize the needs of women, children, and youth, as they are seen to be the most vulnerable demographic. We do this through well-planned and comprehensive programs, including charity work, skill-based workshops, and improving livelihoods, and also through counseling. 70%, I would like to emphasize here, 70% of our works are on empowerment, and 30% of our work involve charity. We focus on generating awareness and knowledge sharing with diverse community to encourage a sustainable impact, especially in Selangor. Ultimately, our aim is also to empower women and youth from marginalized group communities, leading to an improvement in both their lives and livelihood. So that's in a nutshell a little bit about Hope. And now we are a registered organization, and we believe that we have been given a lot of hopes for those who living in a hopeless situation or environment.
So I would like to get into some of the things that you do a little bit more in detail. But first, let's talk about what you brought up earlier. You said that you and your husband started this back in 2004, 2005, but then only got registered in 2014, right? And
yeah.
According to your website, this organization started as an outreach program before, mm-hmm. Evolving into what it is right now. Can you tell me about the whole process, about how y'all started and then how y'all evolved into what y'all are right now?
It all started like 20 years back when I personally, went through the difficult moments when I was studying in University of Malaysia, Sabah. Many of us there, the students, depend on study loans, and it's very kind of like, we have no freedom to finance. So it's very limited. We have to sacrifice a lot. And that time, I still remember when I got the offer from University of Malaysia, Sabah, to do my degree. I went around, to seek for financial assistance. And of course, at that point of time, I was referred to MID, Malaysian Indian Education Development Fund, which was that time operated by MIC. But it wasn't helpful because the interest was so high that I could not take the loan. It was a loan, you know. And going to Sabah is extremely expensive those days as no Air Asia, like. So it's like, you know, only Mars and very, very expensive. So at that point of time, you know, I had some difficulties. And my dad, you know, had a retrenchment and he just took VSS and he started a business and he wasn't doing well. So he struggled with income. So I still remember like my dad and mom, you know, when they know that I'm going to go, you know, to university. So they sell scraps and recycle items to save money for my education. So that's a bit emotional part. At that point of time, you know, I see how they were struggling. And I made a decision at that point of time that I will excel in my studies and help those people in need, especially empowering them in education and skills.
Right.
Because I saw that there wasn't any support system for those, like, you know, people in need. So that's how it started. And thank God we got registered now. And we have like 20 volunteers, full-time volunteers now. And yeah, it's really a great thing to see that things are moving. And we're able to help a lot of people, even students who have financial problem to pay, like, you know, for deposit to enter the university. So even if it is not from us, we will connect them, you know, to the local parliamentarians or, you know, ADUNs to help them. So I know the pain, how it was when I went through, when you don't have any support system. Yeah. So that's made me to take the challenge. And the fire was inside me. And I promised myself, once I'm success, and I will help, you know, the marginalized people who really needs our help.
That's absolutely fantastic. So now let's go a little bit more into what your organization does. So on your website, it stated that your aim is to empower women and youths from poor and marginalized communities. Why did you specifically want to help out in these areas?
Our aim is to make transformation in the life of youths and women. Yeah, we very much focused on Indian community as they represent the larger portion of B40 group. As we are aware, there are serious social problems among them. Like, you know, when you take the statistic of the crime and the social problem, it's alarming among them. So we believe that transformations needed among them, and hence we believe that by molding them towards a better education, they can have a better, you know, future. And our goal is actually changing lives one at a time. Okay. And women are living in vulnerable situation as they faced, like, you know, the community that we're dealing with. They face a lot of domestic violence and, you know, sexual harassment, insecurity. So we support them by giving them a space for them to bring out their problems, their right to redress, and for a space for them for improvement and life enhancement. And the youths, as you know, that the area that we are focusing now, you know, the low-cost flats areas, even plantation estates, and, you know, area where the activity of, like, you know, I wouldn't say like gangsterism, but mostly social problem. We reach the teens through our mentor-mentee program. So it's all started from, you know, from young, because the 13 years is a very crucial age where you can be easily influenced. So that is where, you know, we try to mold them. We have stories like, you know, for an example, schoolboys, young schoolboys, like at the age of 10, caught by police because of carrying drugs. So now the area that we are, you know, working, there is no more pusher or what. They are producing drugs there already. So kids are getting influenced. You know, alcoholism is very high. And you can see kids at the age of like 10 holding, you know, cigarettes and all this kind of things. And they're not schooling, school dropout. So we felt that there needs a transformation. Yeah. So we in Hope Selangor focused on changing lives one at a time. And that's our ultimate goal, to help the youth and also the women community. That's why we focus on youth and women.
And something you brought up earlier, which I find very interesting, is that y'all don't just raise funds and donate. You know, you emphasize a lot on providing these marginalized communities the tools to uplift themselves. You know, maybe it's through classes, through, like you mentioned, the mentor-mentee program. Why do you think it's important not just to donate to marginalized communities, but also give them the tools required to uplift themselves?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. All right. Before that, I also would like to share, our core programs that we, you know, we conduct or we carry out.
Okay.
We focus on giving them like seminars, you know, we conduct a lot of life-changing talks and seminars for youths on social challenges, crime, sexual and gender balance, violence, and some basic human rights and motivations for, you know, women. And our talks and seminars is not like, you know, you talk for like one time and it just end there. It's always followed by a follow-up session after the talks or the seminars to ensure they are on the right track. That is where our mentor-mentee program also involved. Other than that, this capacity building seminars, we also do feeding, you know, the poor and homeless. That's where it's come under the 30% of our charity program. Mm. So, we also do provide like counseling, and that's our para counseling. If there is a need of like, you know, they need to be referred to the certified counselor, we also do that. And we give paralegal support, especially for those who face like, you know, domestic violence, you know, conflicts, or even those who are trying to or attempt suicide. So we also provide such services. We also emphasize on education, yeah, for the children, where I mentioned that we mold them from young. And as I mentioned to you earlier, we emphasize 70% on empowering. So as you mentioned just now, that it's important to not just donate to marginalized communities, but also give them the tools required to uplift themselves. Our policy is always the 3 S. It's SOAP, SOAP, mm-hmm. SOUP, SOUP, and SOUL, SOUL. So what does it mean? Okay, first, SOAP, it stands for cleaning. That means when we see someone who is like physically, you can see like, you know, alcoholic or addict, you know, those who have drugs addicts, or, you know, people are living in a condition, mm-hmm. where they are really, you know, unhygienic condition, you know, they're unclean or whatever. So it's, you can't immediately tell them, hey, you have to see, change your life. So it will start with like, you know, cleaning them. We have done that, like, you know, people who are homeless. So, and then we don't have any shelter at the moment. So we refer them to one of our shelter that we work with, you know, our partner. And also when we go in, like, you know, flats area, PPR, low cost flats, the living conditions are like very unhygienic condition where they're exposed to diseases. And that's where we say, okay, we help them. We have helped like some of them with like, you know, repairing the house, giving them better, you know, furnitures, even bait, you know, we through MCO we provided that and a proper place for them to stay in. And the SOUP stand for, of course, feeding them. It's a food, so we feed them, you know, with nutritious food. And I would like to emphasize here, I mean, in Hope Selangor, we don't just give things like for the sake of giving things, you know, we really don't encourage of like instant noodles, you know. So we try to give nutritious food. That's what we do. And then after that, the soul part is mainly for to enrich their soul with good values, you know, motivation. Sometimes people, we think that why they're living in this condition, because they don't have anybody to motivate them to move on, you know. So that is where we play our role, like, you know, motivate them. Hey, look, you know, what's your problem? And if they have their jobless, we try to connect them. Recently, we just visited one family where the husband is suspected with TB, and she has 5 kids, you know, to feed. So they're jobless, they have nothing to do. So they are clueless, they don't know what to do. So that is where we intervene and we say, look, you know, first you you settle your health problem first, and then we also mentioned to them you can help, you know, in term of like, you know, they have nothing in their pocket, so we say okay, we will help you to connect with the medical doctors. And then after that then he said, oh, I really need a work, you know, to feed my kids. So we connected him, you know, to the work that he's able, like light duties that he's able to do. So these are the things that, you know, we do, and we strongly wants to teach them, like always, like people say, like how to fish rather than giving them the fish, because if not, people will like be very depend on you. And sustainability, very, very important. It's not only giving them, it's for them to sustain and to help their own life, you know. And we can proudly say that we have produced many people who are now on their own with a better life. And I also like to mention that, you know, we have rescued many young girls from social problems, such as child marriage. You wouldn't believe it. It's still happening now, child marriage, early pregnancy, abortion, addictions. Can I share a story?
Yes.
So, for example, there was a story of a girl. I mean, she was actually was studying in a college. So she had contract with a college that there was a clause that she cannot get pregnant, and she was underage that time, you know. So she was clueless, and she was pregnant 5 months, and she decided to attempt suicide. And she wrote a letter, and she said that, you know, I would like to end my life because the college asked her to terminate her contract, and what will happen is she will not be able to finish the, you know, studies. So all the dreams, like, you know, at one point of time, like it's blacked out. So she was clueless, and she was going through depression and everything. So someone actually referred her to me. So I went and visited her, and I spoke to her. You know, it's already 5 months, and you know, you can't abort a baby. It's dangerous for you. And you know, talking to her, you know, advising her, and it take months and months, you know, throughout the pregnancy. We give the support system, whatever it's needed, because she was only at that point of time, I think she's only 19. So she was clueless and everything, and we really, really, really support her. And now, and then she decided to keep the baby. And after she delivered the baby, I was there until she delivered the baby. And when they reached the age, you know, 21 years, I was there to also for their wedding registration. The thing was, now the boy is grown up, he's 1 year old. It just recently happened, he's 1 year old. And
that's really nice.
Yeah. So, you know, I told her, I tell her always that, you see, he's such a jewel, and you know what, you know, if you have, like, you know, abort him, he wouldn't have been in front of you. So I know this kind of things.
Okay. That is some really, really great work you're doing. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about that, but we do need to take a quick break. But when we come back, Prema and I will continue talking about her NGO, Hope Selangor, and some of the challenges she's going through over the years, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Dashran Johan, and in conjunction with World Humanitarian Day, I'm speaking to Prema Tiagu, the founder of Pertubuhan Pembangunan Hope Selangor, an NGO that focuses on helping marginalized communities. Prema, so before the break, we talked about how a lot of your focus goes towards women, the youth, but I've also read that you also help out the Orang Asli communities. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Even though we focused on Indian community, we also help other community who are in need. So, yes, every year, year end, we do Hope for Orang Asli program by providing educational support for school-going kids and motivate them with talks and sharing. And from time to time, we also help them with groceries, you know. It's to show that, you know, of course, they are like marginalized community. They don't actually, like, you know, get together or connect with other communities. So people often, like, you know, don't really go and or think even they are existing. So we believe that, you know, by engaging with them, you know, understanding their culture, we share what we have. So that actually would, to a certain extent, would make them, you know, happy. So it's always a nice feeling when you see the smiles on people's face, right? So yeah. Believe that, you know, we believe that they need that, you know. And of course, our experience, you know, going to Kampong Oras is not easy, especially the journey, you know, because they live very inside. And but the thing is, you know, things are coming better. But they still need help because especially on you know, staff grooming kind of things, you know. So recently, like last year, we visited one of the orang rumah, a kampung orang asli in Negeri Sembilan. Even we started, they have a kind of learning center, and we assisted them with, you know, stationaries and education aid for the children to studies. We are going to go again this year, maybe in October, to provide them with the books. We have all the books, reading books, you know, especially we want to enhance their reading skills on English. So we believe that can actually be helpful for them. Other than orang asli, actually, Dashan, we also assist the community living in plantation estates, yeah, because we have this, our annual program known as From Broken Dreams to New Beginnings. Okay. So this program is actually for to train or to build their confidence, you know, on their, about their life. Most women or, you know, youth there are also facing a lot of social problem because you know how, right, like plantation estates, it's far in, it's isolated, you know. If you want to come to the town, it's take like 1 hour to, for, you know, to drive out. So they are far inside, and most of them, you know, have not, well, they don't have a better quality life or even, you know, after the work hours. So their free time is spent, you know, in some of unhealthy activities, like, yeah, let's say. Most of the plantation workers, just for information, they are earning below their minimum wages. And they don't give much importance to studies because why? You need the house to stay there, right? So in order for you to have the estate house, you have to work at the plantation. So what happened is, after immediately, you know, like form five or whatever, they immediately ask the children to continue their journey. So that they can have a house. So their desperate is, oh, as long as I have a house, I can be here. You know, the future of children is gone. And I've personally witnessed there, the facilities sometimes provided by the companies also not sufficient, yeah, because I've seen kids who are walking, you know, in the road, in very dangerous road, like 20 minutes going to school. So it's not, because we often, like, you know, we forget about our community living in the plantation, thinking of, oh, the company will take care, you know, but it is not. Not every community receives such facilities. So we have actually trained women on self hygiene, you know, skill based training like self grooming. We have given them like classes, even computer literature, so that you know, they know something. Yeah. So and also for information, the child marriage also serious issues among them. And also, you know, women are exposed to like chemical. That's why I'm bringing up like self hygiene, because most of them work as, like, you know, in the plantation sectors as sprayers, you know. So they're exposed to you know, hazardous chemicals, and many of them, you know, have, you know, problem in pregnancy, even health problem related to, you know, women health problem, and they have no ways or, you know, space to redress these issues. So that is where we go in and teach them, you know, what can be done and how they can reach us, you know, and how we can support them. So these are the communities also we are working with, Ladeshan.
And one thing I wanted to ask is, you know, since 2014, I've read that you've carried out over 150 workshops and almost 50 young girls have received counseling. And, you know, the thing that goes through my mind is, it must not be easy doing what you're doing, You know, you're always, as you mentioned, talking to people who are going through hardships, who are suffering. Does the experience become overwhelming?
Okay. I mean, the numbers actually went up, lah. Not the workshop, but the girls and women who received counseling, it actually went up, especially during the MCO. Anyway, I would say no, lah. It's always a heart fulfilling happiness, you know, to help the helpless and hopelessness. We believe that it's our responsibility to make the changes, because. Especially when people, you know, they thank you, you know, just during MCO, actually, many of them thanked us with tears, as they could not reach anyone else when we can actually provide a bowl of rice, you know, to the family. So it's a huge kind of, help for them. So when we see broken family and as para counsel and para legal, we try to glue them back with love. So we do also like gives all this, you know, as I mentioned, life-changing seminars and you know, programs. So that had repented. So there are a lot of things to be done for them, lah. So my question is always, I ask myself is, when I see people in need, you know, especially those family, you know, who suffered for like food, it's not that they are lazy, right? Mm-hmm. So we go and when we go and visit, you know, bedridden dad with kids, you know, mom of course can't go to this to work. She have to take care of the kids. So can we just like close our eyes? No, we can't, right? Because we do need to help them, and they need our help. They need somebody's help to move on, right? So before they take, you know, any other drastic decisions, so. We believe that I always tell people that it's my responsibilities. I see it that way. It's my responsibilities to help them, you know. And I believe that one day if they are in a position, you know, to survive and they can move on, they will help the others. It goes around, you know. So it's, of course, sometimes, you know, it's tiring. Yeah, it's tiring. You know, being, you know, we have other commitment, but the thing is, if not we, and then who will help them?
Yeah.
So that's always keep us moving.
The past few months have been particularly challenging for everyone because of COVID-19 pandemic. Tell us about some of the work you've been doing during the COVID-19 and MCO period.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's a lot of work. Actually, yeah, everyone has the fear of like, you know, COVID-19, and everyone wants to stay at home, right? And I also was advised, even, you know, towards the end of March, I think, where the B40 and M40, you know, when they have received no salary, and, you know, especially for the daily wage earners who have no incomes, you know, and you know, we people start calling us because we have been doing work there, so they know us. So we heard a lot of cries and everything. But then we had, you know, a thought also, wow, COVID-19, it's very wild, aggressive, and, you know, we have to take care of ourselves. But then, you know, when you can't sleep, you know, at the night when people try to call you and say, you know, can you help us with food? Because this month we have no salaries, you know, and our business people like, you know, daily wage earners who, you know, sells nasi lemak or even flowers to survive if they have no income, you know, and things are not, you know, they don't even have food to eat. And I've experienced, you know, all those kind of things. So I can't sleep, you know, when I hear their cries. So that's where we told our team that, hey, guys, we have to do something. So that's where we boldly, like, you know, step out, like, to come out and, you know, but of course, with the proper standard operating procedures, of course, implemented. Yeah. And then because we also faced that, you know, heard that people was telling us that the support from the welfare department was not on time. And then we decided to do something. So, you know, through our friends and relatives, we came forward to help the needies who was in need at that point of time. It was really heartbreaking, you know, to see families eating only white rice with salt. And even some was eating only instant noodles. These are real stories of some of the family faced during the MCO time. And kids were not eating properly. We even saw breastfeeding mom, could not feed their babies due to malnourished they have insufficient of milk production. And I mean, there was one story where in one of the low-cost flats area, our volunteer, because how does it work is in every low-cost flats area or every area that we are working, we have our community leader assigned there who know very well what's going on there. So one of our community leader actually contacted us at night time. They heard someone was crying loud, you know. This is during MCO, we also expanded to migrants and refugees. So this was an Indonesian family living there. So she cried out loud, you know. So, and then they heard her cry. And then one of my community leader went to see her, found out that, she was crying because she was not been like eating for 2 days and she had like 1-year-old baby. So she was like screaming and asking, tolong saya mau makan, you know. So they immediately provided her with food, cause some milk for the baby. And when we went and visited her, you know, she was actually told her that she was terminated from work, and she was not documented, so she's afraid to go out and everything, and was not was not provided. So we actually provided her with food and also milk powder and diapers and even sanitary pads. Mm-hmm. A lot of women was also facing the problem of accessing to, you know, sanitary pads. We provided that too. So I would during the MCO, we provided cooked lunch and dinner packets. Yeah, this is simply because of course we give them groceries, but you see, at that point of time, people have like zero income, nothing to, you know, even a gas tank to cook. So they have all very limited resources. So we have a lot of volunteers or donors who come forward to, you know, cook for them. You know, we provided lunch and dinners on daily basis. And we provided breads, groceries, vegetables, fish. Actually, we sneak out to Sungai Siput, Perak, to get a fresh fish because that was cheaper compared to here. So, and then we provided things like that. And even during the MCO, many of them have limited access to medical aid. Like, for example, those elderly people who got, they're staying here, got separated from their family, you know, from children who stayed far, or even those who are working outstation, they have no medical aid. So what we did also, we supported them, elderly people, medical aid. And we also give psychosocial support. Like, we receive few suicide attempts due to, debt bondage, because, not every landlord, were compromising with rent. People were really, really living in anxiety and depression. So we do support it. I think 2 families with rent, because she was a single mother with disabled child, and she had no income, nothing. Even she was suffering for food, so we helped them. And even during MCO adoption, we actually supported children with education. How we does is by providing workbook, for those who have no access to internet, because at that point of time, everything was online learning from school. But school forgot about kids or students who have no access to internet, because even you have no food to eat, what more for internet, right? So we provided a workbook, and then we go and collect it, and we check, and that's how we did. And I think throughout this MCO period, we did almost 130 activities, where almost 10,500 beneficiaries were helped through HOPE. There was one story which actually catch many people's attention. I'm not sure whether if you have visited our Facebook. It's about a little cute hand with a lot of pain. The video on about a special man. He has a very little cute, I wouldn't say he's a disabled, that's why I'm marking him as a special man. He says kacang putih.
Okay.
So at that point of time, I think not in March, but towards like, you know, April and May, like that, he came out and, you know, was selling, you know, it was difficult for him to carry that basket, I saw. And what we did was we stopped him. We bought all the kacang putih, you know. So he got so excited. When we interviewed him, his mother was like a stroke patient, you know. So we give immediate support, of course, with the groceries, everything. And recently, we supported him because we put in the Facebook, we got some donation. We supported him as a model for him to buy, you know, kacang putih for him, you know, to sell. And we kept him as a role model for many others, lah, because he came forward to help others. So we also say that, you know, this is a man of a good example, you know. So, yeah, but he still needs continued support. So we have tell the public that he needs the support. So it's in the Facebook.
And you also earlier mentioned that there's a rise in women coming to you for counseling during the MCO period. Why is this so?
I mean, when you have that situation where debt, it's alarming, like for example, debt means you have no income, but you need to pay for rent, you need to pay for the food and any other commitments, you know, for the medicine. So if it is zero income but expenses is like 50%, so that's created what you call depression. And other than that, the depression somehow or rather, some people were able to manage the depression, but some of them managed the depression in some other way, like, you know, of course, like, you know, drinking alcohol and getting drunk and what will happen. So there were domestic violence in the houses. So in the family, like, so a lot of cases where women face, verbal harassment from their spouse and, domestic violence. There was also cases where we have faced that some of them also got injured, yeah, because beaten by the husband. So this kind of situation, depression was there and moreover, kids' education was like, oh, what's going to happen, you know? And for those who have no access to online educations and everything, so it's like kids were not studying that. But all these kind of things actually made a woman, like, you know, living in a depression situation. And these were the situations where many of them needed help or needed support in terms of like counseling. So these are one category that we actually assisted through the phone. Of course, we can't meet them, but through the phone, we advise them. And one I have seen like I always keep connect with the community. So I've seen one of the status where she cut her, you know, wrist and it was bleeding and she put in a status. So I've immediately called and say, what's going on? And she say, you know, I have this and that, you know, my husband is doing this, that, doing that, you know, my kids are not studying. So we give immediate support, say, no, this is not the solution. There's more solution. Okay, in terms of groceries or what, we can help you. But, you know, for the time being, we can help you. You know, later on, we also can connect you, you know. We also support some of them by providing them, you know, some kind of work, like work from home, like baking, you know. So we say, okay, never mind. Because at that point of time, a lot of food deliveries was like in need, right? Demand was quite high. So that's how we help.
Okay. We only have a few minutes left. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yeah. All of us actually can do something to help someone. As Mother Teresa said, if you can't feed 100 people, then feed just one. So we in Hope Selangor give hope to those living in hopelessness, and our aim is to change one life at one time. So we believe that you can stand together with us to help the helpless people or the marginalized community. They do need us.
All right. Before I let you go, tell us how people can join or contribute to Hope Selangor.
You can actually like our page or visit our Facebook page that's most updated. Pertubuhan Pembangunan Hope Selangor. That's our Facebook page. And I repeat again, our Facebook page is Pertubuhan Pembangunan Hope Selangor, and our number, contact number, is there, 012-907-6266. And you also can visit our website, www.hopeselangor.org. So you can connect to us, even if you want to be our volunteers or you would like to give something to support the people in need, please do contact us. And how does Hope Selangor work is, whatever, you know, if people are donating to us, we will make sure that we give them the report. The report means with, you know, proof of, like, you know, evidence of things given to them, and receipts, and of course with photos, to be transparent, so that people also, like, you know, they feel like better, oh wow, okay, it went to the right place, you know, right, to right person or right people. So that's how it works. So please do visit our Facebook page, so that you can get more updated, and you can get more information there.
Thank you, Prema, for coming on the show and also doing great work for the needy and marginalized communities.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
That was Prema Tiago, one of the founders of the NGO Pertubuhan Pembangunan Hope Selangor, whom I was speaking with in conjunction with World Humanitarian Day, which is today. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcasts on the BFM app, BFM.my, or on Spotify. Once again, I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to BFM.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.